makers of Chase and Sanborn Coffee, the superb blends you know is fresh, present the Chase and Sanborn Hour. And your host, Don Amici.
This is Don Amici ushering in another Chase and Sanborn Hour with Hollywood greetings from Dorothy L'Amour, Donald Dixon, Robert Armbruster, and the Chase and Sanborn Orchestra, and New York hellos from Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy. You know, Edgar and Charlie are going to do their stuff from New York City.
Donald Dixon.
Yes, Bob, what is it?
Here's a note Charlie left for you.
Oh, thanks, Bob.
Hey, look, with Charlie waiting in New York, couldn't you fellas let me go on without interruption, just for a change?
Sorry, Don, but Charlie wrote on the envelope to be delivered when Amici gets started spouting.
Oh, I see. For a while, all was peace and quiet around here. Tonight, we welcome another trio of special guests, Virginia Bruce, Stuart Irwin, and Charlie's own New York sparring partner, Tony Galento. I hope that...
Dear Mr. Dixon, enclosed you will...
Donald, can't you read Charlie's note some other time?
Well, I'm sorry, Don, but on the flap of the envelope, it says to be read good and loud as soon as Amici introduces our guests.
This place is haunted by that McCarthy menace. All right, go ahead, read your note, read it.
Thanks. Dear Mr. Dixon, I meant to enclose the dollar I owe you, but I forgot about it until after I mailed this letter. Sincerely, Charlie.
All right, now may I tell everyone that I hope they will enjoy our show and that throughout the week they'll remain our friends as well as friends of Chase and Sanborn?
Sure, go ahead.
Now look, Dixon. This has gone just about
far. Oh, wait a minute, Don. Charlie added a P.S. in his note. It's for you.
Oh, well, at least he thought of me. What does he say?
Well, he says, P.S. Tell Amici that this is the first successful attempt ever made at coast-to-coast heckling.
All right, Heckler McCarthy, you win. And your substitute heckler, Donald Dixon, is raring to go in a field in which he is much more expert. He sings that sprightly rhythmic tune, Midnight in Paris. So vive la Dixon!
Cold, my heart is bold, a throbbing voice within me calls, and I must obey. Midnight in Paris, a strange delight steals through the night. I hear the sweetest music, oh, what does it say? Midnight in Paris, live romance and love. Of midnight in Paris, cherry. Hearts are young, love is free. Won't you share it with me? Who's all amour? The hearts are in danger at midnight in Paris, cherry. What's to be is to be. Won't you share it with me? Oh, sweet is the madness of night, but a young love is free. Would you share it with me? Je l'amour. Hearts are in danger at midnight in Paris, cherry. What's to be is to be. Won't you share?
Erstwhile friend Charlie is in transit this week. Accompanied by Edgar Bergen, he hopped a train and took a jaunt to New York City. But we have arranged to hear from Charlie, and before you can say, Peter Piper picked a peck of pickled peppers, Edgar and Charlie will be talking to you. So, Peter Piper picked...
Here I am, Mr. Amici. I got you before you could say peppers. Isn't that clever?
Charlie, we've certainly satisfied the wanderlust in us, haven't we?
Yes, we have, all right. Yeah.
We've really been seeing the country, haven't we?
Yes, sure have.
You know, it's hard to believe that that streamlined train of today is related to the iron horse of yesterday.
Yes, it certainly is. Such improvements, huh?
Yes.
Can't get over it. Well, you know, I pushed a button on a train and a sink came out. Surprise, my goodness. Pushed another button and a porter came out. Then I pushed a porter and my teeth came out. Oh, dear. That put a stop to that.
Well, we saw a good many things.
Yes.
On our trip that we should have a lasting memory of.
I'm sure we will, yes.
What impressed you the most, Charlie?
Oh, I don't know. I think Helen.
Well, no. No, I mean such sights as the mountains of Arizona.
Oh, she was pretty, too.
And the plains of Kansas.
She said she'd write to me.
Charlie. Is that all you got from our trip? Just the memory of Helen?
Oh, no. Got a phone number, too. I see.
Well, I'm afraid you've missed the real purpose of this trip.
Do tell.
Yes.
Well, I did just what you told me to. You told me to embrace every opportunity.
Yes. I see.
Yeah.
Then why did you spend so much time with Helen?
Bergen, you don't own an opportunity when you see one.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Well, forget about Helen. I'm anxious to see how much you really do remember about our trip.
Oh, you do?
Yes. Now, what was the first big city we stopped at after we left Los Angeles?
The first big city.
That's right.
The first big city. Do you know what? Give me a hint.
Well, remember the Indians.
Oh, yeah. Indianapolis.
No. Oh, it was Albuquerque.
Oh, Albuquerque, yes.
Now, didn't you find the Indians interesting?
Yes, I did. But I tried to talk to them, but he didn't understand what I was saying.
He didn't.
Guess he hasn't been over here very long.
I see. Why, Charlie, the Indians are the real original Americans.
Yes,
and they have a very interesting language of their own.
No.
Yes. Do you know how an Indian says, hello?
How?
That's right.
What's right?
How?
No, I asked you first now.
Well, that means hello. How?
Oh, how come?
Well, I don't know.
How do you say goodbye so we get out of this thing?
Well, at any rate, the Indians are a very interesting race of people.
Yeah, but I don't know. I'm just a little afraid of them. I don't know. Their tomahawks and their scalping business.
Oh, that's silly. Yeah. Why, there's nothing to be afraid of.
No,
I wasn't afraid.
You weren't afraid.
No.
No. What have you got to lose?
All right. I presume you're referring to my hair.
Or the absence thereof, yes.
Well, I don't see anything very funny about that.
You don't see anything funny?
No, I really don't.
I see. You don't see anything funny?
No.
I see. All right. But we do, don't we?
Well, I still have hopes of growing hair.
Is that so?
Yes.
Wishing won't make it grow.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'd rather talk about the trip.
I don't blame you.
Now, I think the high spot was that wonder of the world, that awe-inspiring, breathtaking view of unparalleled beauty.
Yes.
The Grand Canyon.
Oh, yes, that thing, yes.
What?
Biggest washout I ever saw. That reminds me, the filling in my tooth came out this morning.
No, never mind. Charlie, weren't you impressed by the Grand Canyon?
Yes, I was, yes. It'll be nice when they get it finished.
But it is finished.
Oh, it is finished, yes. Well, then they ought to hold it over another year.
Yeah. Charlie, how old do you think the Grand Canyon is?
Oh, I don't know. I guess 100 years, I betcha.
100 years?
Yeah.
It's more than that.
More than that?
Yes. Guess again.
Oh, it's 1,000 years.
1,000 years. More than that, Charlie.
More than that, huh?
Yes.
Well, it's 1750. Now, that's the best I can do.
Now, Charlie. Listen, Charlie,
I am not to be dickered with, Mr. Bergen. 1750. Listen, you can take it or you can leave it, Charlie. I'm not making a penny on this canyon. Oh. If it wasn't for the quick turnover of stock, I don't know.
All right. Well, the Grand Canyon is over 1,000,000 years old.
Easy, Bergen. This is only 1939.
Yes, I do you remember the interesting rock formation we saw when we rode down the side of the canyon?
Yeah.
On those mules?
Yeah. Yes, I do, yes. And remember the glorious sight at the bottom of the canyon. Yeah. You mean the box lunch? No. Fried chicken? It was very nice. No, Charlie. There was the Colorado River. Oh, yes. And the cactus grove. Yes. Hard-boiled eggs and pickles. Yes. And then we went back up again on that narrow trail on one of those stumble-bum mules. Oh, you're safe on those mules, Charlie. Yes, they seldom fall. Yeah, well, once is enough. As you rode up that jagged, narrow path on the back of that mule. Yes. I guess you must have appreciated the wearing powers of erosion. Yes, I sure did, yes. I tried sitting side saddle, but it didn't help much. That's all. Say, Bergen. Yes? Do we have to go back the same way? Why? Well, I don't know. It just seems in this modern age we could get from coast to coast without having to do part of it on muleback. Oh, I see. Well, no, Charlie, I think we're going to fly back. Fly back? Yes. Oh, boy. Fly, huh? Yes. You know what that means. Yeah, hostess is... No. Oh, dear. No, Charlie, on our way back, I'm planning to stop off at Yellowstone Park. No. Yeah. Yellowstone Park? Yes. Oh, gee. Isn't that where they raise geezers? No. Not geezers. Gobers? No. Geysers? No. What is it then? It's geysers. Oh, geysers. Yeah, that's it. Yeah. Well, I was all around it, wasn't I? Yes. If I'd been any closer, I'd gotten wet. Yeah. Well, you know what geysers are, don't you? What geysers are? Yes. Oh, yes, a geyser is it's a sort of a glorified squirt. Yeah. Glorified squirt. Yeah. Just like you. Yeah. Oh, please, Bergen, let me make the quips.
In days gone by, they had a quaint little custom in which serenaders would choose a lovely song and sing out their hearts beneath the beautiful lady's casement. But in this day and age, we reverse the process and we have the lovely lady singing a serenade to us instead. The girl, of course, is our own Dorothy Lavour, and the song is a favorite with present-day serenaders. The lamp is low.
This dream will ever know.
Sunday in and Sunday out, we like to sing the praises of Chase and Sanborn Coffee.
Oh, I don't think we say so much about coffee, Don, considering that...
Considering what, Donnie?
Well, after all, an hour is 60 minutes long and...
Oh, smart girl.
Sure, and out of that 60 minutes, we only spend two or three talking about coffee.
Yes, and I think people appreciate that. Now, tonight we have some special messages for different parts of the country. If you live in the East, you like to know what Chase and Sanborn is doing there.
And in Chicago, you want to know what happens in Chicago.
That's right. So now, in different sections of the country, there are announcers waiting for me to give them the cue to tell them about Chase and Sanborn Coffee in their own locality.
Will you say that again, Don?
Well, it works like this. In New York, Bill Spargrove is waiting for a certain cue before he throws a switch. Then he can talk over several Eastern stations and tell them what's going on there.
And right at the same time, other people talk on other stations?
That's it, exactly. In Chicago, John Holtman is waiting to give a special message to people in that section of the country. James Matthews is here on the West Coast. Jim Bannon will speak to other parts of the United States. Prescott Robinson is in Canada. So here goes for the cue, and Dottie, I'm going to let you give it. Here it is. Read it.
Gentlemen, let's have the news.
Thanks, Don and Dorothy. This is Bill Spargrove, and I'm speaking to those who live in the East. It's about the Chase and Sanborn dated coffee in the new silver package. It may be some time before other parts of the country see this new package, but here, it's already on sale and it's a tremendous success. Chase and Sanborn is a wonderful, rich blend of coffee, and what's more, it's freshly roasted. Now, freshness makes a big difference because coffee can go bad, the same as milk or eggs. So we make sure that you get our coffee really fresh. As soon as it's roasted, automatic machines pack it in these wonderful new silver packages. And then it goes out to the grocery stores in fast trucks. Now that date you see on the package tells you the day your grocer received it. So you can tell that you're getting good, fresh coffee every time. And whether you serve it hot or as iced coffee, you can be sure of wonderful, fresh flavor. Now there's no extra charge for dated coffee in the new silver package. Same reasonable prices as always. Now, this is Sunday evening, and tomorrow, Monday, the stores will be open bright and early. Chase and Sanborn dated coffee is there, and it's fresh. Make a special point of buying a package for your family and give them a treat.
In our file of guests to look forward to, B is for Blonde, Beautiful, and Bruce. Meaning, of course, none other than our talented visitor, Virginia Bruce. At present, Virginia's charming audiences all over the country with her fine performance in Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer's production, Stronger Than Desire. And it's mighty nice to have her with us tonight. It is my pleasure to appear with Miss Bruce in an original radio sketch written by Diana Carlson, entitled, If at First You Don't Succeed. In the lovely home of Lorraine and Frank Langhorn, a party is in progress. It's a very special party given in honor of Lorraine's sister, Violet, who has just returned from an extended trip in Europe. The party is at its height, and everyone seems to be enjoying the festivities, except the hostess, who is, at the moment, entering the library.
Frank, Peter, what are you two doing in the library when there's a party in progress?
Oh, we were just talking. Shall we get away from the noise for a few minutes?
Well, talk some other time. Peter, do you know where Violet is?
My dear Lorraine, despite the fact that the lovely Violet is your sister, I have no desire to see her, and therefore I avoid her.
Peter, Jeffrey, you're impossible. In fact, so is Violet. Here you haven't seen one another for 2 years, and all you do is glare at each other.
Well, my dear, if Peter doesn't like Violet, and Violet doesn't like Peter, then...
You keep quiet, Frank. You may be my husband, but you haven't got a brain in your head. And you, Peter, who do you think you're fooling? You're dying to talk to Violet, and you know it.
Violet and I never talk to each other. We claw, and I'm not in a scratching mood tonight.
Why I take so much trouble to bring you two together is beyond me.
Bring who together?
Oh, hello, Violet.
Am I intruding? Is this a private conference?
Not now. Do you mind if I join the rest of the party?
Please do. It's rather stuffy here at the moment.
Oh, come now. You two don't really feel that badly towards each other, do you?
My darling brother-in-law, I wouldn't be seen with Peter Jeffrey's left tonsil.
You're quite safe. I parted with them years ago.
How nice. For your tonsils.
Well, I think I'll attend to my less healthy guests. Coming, Frank?
Coming, dear. Coming.
Lorraine is rather obvious, isn't she?
Lorraine is a very genuine woman, which is more than one can say for a sister.
I don't care for your mother's son, either.
Guess your 2 years haven't changed you much after all. Let's sit down and talk this over, shall we? There, have a seat, won't you?
Thank you.
Might as well be comfortable while we're tearing each other's hair out.
I'll be careful with yours. I notice it isn't quite as thick as it used to be.
Yeah, well, I can't say the same for yours. It's just as pretty as ever.
Oh, Mr. Jeffries, how kind of you.
Oh, not at all. It's very beautiful hair, you know. Although I'm not sure that I like this color better than its natural color.
Why, you insufferable, rude, ill-mannered...
Mustn't forget your newly acquired sophistication.
All right, tell me about yourself, Peter. What have you been doing? Last I heard, you were being considered for that partnership in your law firm.
Oh, but that only came up a couple of weeks ago. How did you know?
Oh, Lorraine seemed to think it her duty to inform me constantly of your progress.
Uh-huh, good old Lorraine. Well, she kept me posted on your doings, too. What about that phony prince you were so interested in?
He isn't phony, and he was interested in me. And anyway, what business is it of yours?
Oh, none at all, none at all. But pictures of you two have been floating around in the high society columns, and my curiosity was aroused. And also, after one look at his face, my protective instinct.
Your solicitude touches me deeply, but I'd suggest that you save your protection for yourself. You'll need it if Adeline Hoffer keeps chasing you.
Miss Hoffer is a delightful person.
She must have changed.
As for her chasing me, that's ridiculous.
Well, I agree with you. From an entirely different point of view.
And what, may I ask, is your objection to Adeline?
Objection? Oh, well, you misjudge me. I've nothing at all against her.
Oh, well, I should think not. She may not be your streamlined, sophisticated, wise-cracking 1939 model young lady.
Oh,
but...
definitely not. Closer to the 1890 model.
Well, I like the 1890 model, and it wouldn't do you any harm if you had some of her old-fashioned charm, either.
I imagine you like horses, too.
I prefer them to certain feminine company.
Well, don't let me keep you. Go chew the cud with dear Miss Hoffer.
You're confusing your animals a bit, aren't you? You're thinking of a cow.
I certainly am. Good night.
Good night.
Oh, by the way, I don't believe I'll see you again, so let's make it goodbye instead.
Goodbye?
Yes, I'm returning to Europe next week.
Returning to Europe next week?
On the Queen Mary.
On the Queen Mary?
Nice witty comeback you've got there. It's a little monotonous, though.
Your news started me, that's all. I suppose that means you're going to marry that royal four-flusher, hmm?
He isn't a four-flusher.
And he isn't royal, so that takes care of him.
Just how do you presume to know so much about the prince?
Well, I make a point of looking up people who claim to have blue blood in their veins.
You also make a point of sticking your nose into other people's business.
Certain people, yes. Violet, are you going to marry that stuffed shirt?
Well, really?
Are you?
Suppose I am.
Now, don't give me any of that stuff. Will you answer straight, yes or no?
It's none of your darn business.
That's what you think.
And for your information, Peter Jeffries, I wouldn't marry the best man living.
Well, I haven't proposed to you yet.
Well, of all the conceited, impossible boors I ever had the misfortune to grow up with.
You're not very grammatical, and anyhow, you said yes to me once.
I assure you, I never make the same mistake twice. This time I'll leave. Good night.
Bye. Please don't go by.
Take your hands off
no,
me.
No, you've got to listen to me.
I said take your hands off
I've
me.
I heard you. Now, are you going to listen to me or aren't you?
Peter, I warn you. Let go.
I'll do nothing of the kind. I can be just as stubborn as you are, and by heaven, this is one time you're going to listen to me, whether you like it or not.
Peter, if you don't let go of me this instant, I'll slap your face.
You dare. You just dare to slap me. Why, you little spitfire, you...
You slapped me.
Yeah, and I'll slap you again if you try another stunt like that.
But you... You slapped me.
You said that before, and your mouth's open.
I could kill you for that.
Oh, listen, Vi, I had to do it. I had to stop you from going out of my life again. Please don't turn your head away. Look at me, Vi. Don't you see?
Please, let me go.
You've got to hear me. Vi, listen, let me tell you.
I'm not interested in anything you have to say.
When you broke our engagement and went away, I felt the whole world rock under my feet. I couldn't believe it. Days, weeks, months. I told myself it wasn't true.
You're only making this more difficult.
Oh, I know. We were always quarreling. We were always upsetting each other. But we could have straightened that out with a little patience and then understanding. We were both headstrong and willful. You were so pretty and so popular, and I'd be wild with jealousy. I wanted so much to do the right thing, and I always did the wrong thing. I just didn't know how to handle you.
You do now, I suppose.
Oh, I certainly do.
Your way of handling me is to slap me unconscious.
I didn't slap you unconscious.
You did.
Well, then you certainly made a quick recovery.
Do I have to listen to any more of this, or are you through now?
Just one more thing. I slapped you because I had to find out if the real Violet was there underneath that artificial covering you surrounded yourself with. I wanted to see if you were still the same Violet that I love, but you're not.
You're a conceited, stuffy, snobbish brat, and I'm glad you finally opened my eyes.
Are you through now?
Yes, I'm through.
Thank you. Before I go, I'd like to tell you something. When I left you to go away, I wasn't happy either. I loved you too, Peter Jeffries. Loved you with all my heart. But I hate you now, do you understand? I hate you, and I never want to see you again as long as I live. Peter.
Oh, Violet.
Oh, Peter. Peter, I didn't mean it. I didn't mean a word I said.
Oh, darling, darling, neither did I.
Oh, but I'm horrid, Peter. Horrid and mean and nasty, but I love you.
Oh, you're not horrid. I am. You're an angel, and, oh, I adore you.
Oh, hold me tight, Peter. Don't ever let me go again.
No, darling, I never will.
Oh, but I'm frightened.
Frightened, sweet?
Well, just think, we nearly lost each other again.
Oh, no, we didn't.
Oh, but Peter, I was going away.
No, you weren't. I wasn't going to let you.
Well, you couldn't have stopped me.
Well, yes, I could. I knew you loved me.
What?
Of course I did.
Well, that's impossible. I certainly didn't throw myself at you.
Oh, that's just it.
Just what do you mean by that, Crack?
Well, you told me you hated me.
Well, I certainly did.
Well, nobody could have hated me that much without being in love with me.
Why, you... Peter, darling.
Oh, you angel, you...
WEAF, New York.
In fondo al cuore, anima si dore. Stanchi, o anime ne sani giacente, o dolorose vite, qui non riserò mai fati gioconi, al corre in ogni cantano l'acque, cantano le prese.
Last week on the set of 20th Century Fox, I invited one of my co-workers in Hollywood Cavalcade to pay us a visit. So, with the invitation accepted, it is definitely a pleasure to say hello to that man among men, that face among faces, that living epitome of the soft-spoken word, that unsullied, unsung, and unconscious Stuart Irwin himself.
Well, what are you applauding for, Stu?
That fella you were talking about. Bring him on in.
Well, now, don't look now, but that fella I was talking about was you.
Me? Gee, I didn't know you felt that way about me. Can I quote you on that, Don?
Why, sure you can quote me.
Have you got a pencil, Don?
Yeah, here.
Have you got a piece of paper, Don?
Well, now, wait a minute, Stu. You're kind of making a pest of yourself, aren't you?
Can I quote you on that, Don?
Now, look, Stu, what is this? Can I quote you? Have you got a pencil? Can I quote you?
Oh, then you haven't heard.
No, I haven't heard. What?
I'm working on a newspaper now.
No.
Sure. You're talking to Snoop Peeper Irwin. The writer of the new gossip column, Hollywood Through a Keyhole, or Life is Scandalous, ain't it?
Huh? Oh, well, I didn't know that.
Oh, no one else does. I'm anonymous.
Well, let's hear about this column of yours, Snoop.
Please, Don. Snoop.
Oh, Snoop.
I give my readers the inside news behind the outside lowdown on the high spots behind the locked doors outside the inside of Hollywood. Period.
Oh, it sounds a little inside out to me, exclamation point.
Listen, comma. You see, I've got a new slant on things. For my keyhole peeping, I carry my own door.
Oh, I get it. When a dog bites a man, that's not news. When a man bites a dog, that's news, huh?
Yeah. I got a new slant on that, too.
Oh, yeah?
When a dog bites a man, that's not news. But when a man bites a dog, that's Coney Island.
Well, say, that is a new angle, Stu.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you get all your information? Where do you go and do your snooping? The Trot, the Grove, the Bowl?
No, not me. I go to the Dog Pound.
The Dog Pound?
Mm-hmm. Last week, I got a whole litter of blessed events.
Oh, well, that's Ducky.
No, that's Puppy. Oh, I really get around, Don. Yesterday, I went to the public library.
The public library?
Mm-hmm. Twice.
Well, now, listen, Stu, I've lived in this town for a good many years, but I've never gotten to any of those places. How do you do it?
Pull.
Oh, you're in with the police, huh?
Well, once.
Oh, boy, are you a wide-awake reporter?
Can I quote you on that, Don?
I doubt it.
Oh, thank you. You know, a news hawk has to keep wide awake. Remember the old saying, when a man stays awake, that's not news, but when a man goes to sleep, that's snooze.
Good. Yeah, how true. Must be a great column you're writing.
Can I quote you on that, Don?
No, you can't quote me on that. I've never even seen your column.
Well, now, look, I happen to have a leather-bound copy of today's issue with me. Do you want to hear some of my exclusive peepings?
All right, peep away, Snoop.
Well, now listen. Listen to this swell human interest story that I peeped out. Are you listening?
Are you peeping?
I'm peeping.
Well, I'm all ears, too.
Can I quote you on that, Don?
Don't you dare.
Well, here's the item. Her thousands of friends will be glad to know that Lorena Gishelgushel is recuperating very rapidly from her recent illness. Congratulations on your convalescence, Lorena Gishelgushel. Whatever that means. What do you think of that, Don?
Oh, well, I am so happy for her. But who is Lorena Gobblegusher?
Gishelgushel.
Oh.
She's the daughter of Mr. and Mrs. Gishelgushel.
Oh.
The Iowa Gishelgushels.
Oh, ho, ho, ho.
The Gishelgushels.
Oh, ho, ho, ho. Mm-hmm. Yeah, fine. But what is Miss Lorena G. doing in Hollywood?
She's recuperating.
All right, she's recuperating. But what did she do before she started recuperating?
She got sick.
Yeah, I know, but before she started recuperating from getting sick, what did she do?
I don't know. It all seemed simple enough when I wrote it.
Listen, Stu, you're writing a movie column. What's glamorous about Lorena Gishelgushel?
Uh-huh, I got you anxious, Don, huh?
Yeah, I'm on tenterhooks.
Well, I'll unhook you in a minute. Lorena has left the Independent Studios and is now working at 20th Century Fox.
Oh, well, that's swell. I'm always glad to hear someone getting a break.
She didn't get a break. She got sick.
Yeah, I know, but then she recuperated, then she convalesced. Now she's working at 20th Century Fox.
That's right.
What's she doing at 20th Century Fox?
Waiting.
Waiting on what?
Tables.
Well, who was interested in that?
The people she waits on. Look, Don, nobody puts her thumb in the soup like Lorena.
Stu, where do you dig up items like that?
Well, now, if you won't let it out, Don. You see, the gateman at 20th Century Fox is the uncle of the number 3 bus boy who is working at Lorena Gishelgushel's table. And he's my undercover man.
Shh. I guess you have to pay him a pretty penny for that kind of stuff, huh?
Oh, no. There's no undercover charge.
Well, Stu, you know, so far you haven't even mentioned one thing in your Hollywood column that means something to a movie fan. How do you keep up your circulation?
I rub myself with a rough towel. Why? Why, Don?
I don't know. Sounded simple enough when I asked you.
Look, Don, can I put you on my subscription list?
I should say not.
Well, then you won't be able to read my column.
That's just what I mean.
Can I quote you on that?
Yes, you can definitely quote me on that.
Oh, well. Well, it's been very nice talking to you, Don, and I've got a swell idea for my column out of it.
What's that?
Seen at Chase and Sanborn show, Don Ameche passing the time of day with a handsome, brilliant, unidentified man.
A handsome, brilliant, unidentified man? Who's that?
Me. I love to see myself in print. So long, Don.
So long, Snoop. Can I quote you on that? In popular songs, sweethearts have been known to build castles in the air, wear rainbows round their shoulders, and claim the moon as their own personal property. In their latest enthusiasm, songwriters have created a new method to transport us to the celestial kingdom of lovers, a stairway to the stars. I'd like to climb it for you. Let's build a stairway to the stars. And climb that stairway to the stars, with love beside us to fill the night with a song. We'll hear the sound of violins out yonder where the blue begins. The moon will guide us as we go drifting along. And we sail away on a lazy daisy pedal over the rim of the hill. And we sail away on a little dream and settle high on the crest of a thrill. Let's build a stairway to the stars, a lovely stairway to the stars. It would be heaven to climb to heaven with you. Daisy paddle over the rim of the hill. Can't we sail away on a little dream and settle high on the crest of a thrill? Let's build a stairway to the stars, a lovely stairway to the stars. It would be heaven to climb to heaven with.
In New York, at this very moment, Edgar and Charlie are preparing to greet a very special guest of their own, an outstanding figure in the sport world. So, okay, Charlie, take it away.
There was a young man named Galento who was built like a big circus tento. When he waded right in with a fist to the chin, it felt like a ton of cemento. Oh, I know a dozen of them.
Yes. Well, Charlie, don't get too flip.
Why?
Well, Tony Galento isn't a fellow to clown with.
If he says anything, I'll moid it a bum.
Oh, you will. I heard that crack. Stop stealing my stuff, Charlie.
Oh. Hey, you want to make anything of it? Say, let's swap a few punchlines, huh, Tony?
You better watch your step there, buddy. Oh. I'll pull you from like an artichoke.
Sure, I see. Well, I apologize, Tony. I had no hard feelings, you know. But I wouldn't have said it if I'd known it was you, Tony.
That's who it is. It's me.
Yeah, well, I didn't recognize you. With your eyes open.
Good job.
See, I'm fighting with Dick.
Charlie, that's entirely out of order. Now, Mr. Galento is our guest.
Yes, sir.
And he has won a great respect in pugilistic circles.
Oh, did he win?
Yeah, Charlie. Quite. Regardless of what Charlie says, the fact remains, Tony, that you put up a whale of a battle.
Yeah, I almost murdered the bum. Mm-hmm. I just got careless, that's all.
Yeah. When you got down there, you should have stayed down, Charlie.
Well, you don't understand, Charlie. I got something in my eyes.
Yeah, I know. You just opened your eye and a fist flew in. I know.
Well, if I'm not mistaken, in the third round, Lewis opened up his eye and Tony's fist flew in.
Yes, I should have kept him down. I just got careless, that's all. I got something in my eyes.
I see. Well, how do you train, Tony?
Oh, I got my own system.
Mm-hmm. But you do road work, don't you?
Oh, sure.
I thought
if so. I ain't too tired, I do a little walking.
Yeah.
I heard you did your road work with one foot on the running board of a car.
But it's more comfortable sitting in the back seat of my car.
Yes, I am. do you train on a liquid diet?
That's right.
Yeah. Well, now listen, Tubby. I mean, Tony. How do you feel about drinking water?
Well, if taken in moderation, it won't hurt anybody.
Yeah.
Well, Tony, what did you do before you took up fighting as a career?
Well, when I was a kid, I used to deliver ice and orange.
Mm-hmm.
But I gave it up. There was no future in it.
I can see that. Yeah. Do you think you're going to fight Joe Lewis again?
Yes. After I take care of Lunova, then I want a return match with that Lewis.
Uh-huh. You think there's any future in that?
Yeah. Insult me again.
I was just talking, that's all.
Yeah. Well, all I can say is, if you do get a return bout, Tony, may the best man win.
Thanks, Mr. Bergen. I feel the same way about it. He's been champing long enough.
Yeah, I see. Yeah. Well, Tony, maybe this last time you got off on the wrong foot.
He got off both feet.
Now, Charlie, that's enough of that.
I'm sorry, I was just talking.
Tony, I'd like to hear your version of the fight.
Yeah, yes, Tony, your version. And well, try and not be prejudiced now.
Well, I was all right, but I made a couple of mistakes in round one. Lewis went to the ring, then I entered the ring, see?
That's where you made your first mistake. Now, Charlie...
In the second round...
Yeah, well, tell us about the fourth round, round four.
Well, I'll tell you what happened in the fourth round.
Yeah?
When the bell rang...
And the angel sang...
Now you realize what I'm up against with this rascal, Tony.
Yeah, Mr. Galindo, I'd like to know how old you were when you first started on a fighting career. That's what I'd like to know.
Well, when I reached my majority of development of the great fascination for the manly art of self-defense...
Oh, you're going to give me that stuff, are you? Oh, I see. Yeah, he's not
then,
well, yeah, no.
Then I resolved to become a student of the Marxists of the Queensberry Rules, see?
Now, wait a minute. Now, you better adjust your vocabulary, Tony. You're using too rich a mixture there.
Well, will you please be quiet, Charlie?
All right, yes.
Mind your own business, you catty. Listen, you're talking to a Harvard man.
Yeah, well, I can't top that.
Charlie, if you were smart, you'd do more listening and less talking.
I guess so.
And learn something about fighting.
Yeah. Oh, I don't know. I can mix it up a little when the occasion calls for it.
Yeah, but how do you come out of it?
Well, once I had a fisticuffical encounter in back of the school building with Skyler Van Snort, you see.
How'd you come out of that one?
Well, I tell you, Tony, I was careless. I was careless, Tony. I got something in my eye.
Well, what happened?
I don't know, Tony. I don't know what happened. I slept through most of it. I saw Halley's Comet pass me three times.
I think I remember that fight, Charlie.
Yeah?
Yes, you had a beefsteak on your eye for a while, didn't you?
Yes, I did, yeah.
Yeah, did you really get a shiner, Charlie?
Oh, boy, he didn't miss me, Tony. He didn't miss me.
Well, didn't you do any damage to him?
I'm glad you asked me that, Tony. I sure did. For about a week, his left eye was closed for repairs, you know?
That's right, kid. Come right back at him. That's my system.
Yeah, if he doesn't come back at me first, I do, yes.
Well, you know, Tony, I was sorry I couldn't actually see your fight. But it certainly was thrilling to listen to. And regardless of the outcome, there were a lot of people surprised at what you did in that ring.
Yes, so was I. I got careless, that's all. I got something in my eye. I should have murdered the bum. After my eye was cut, I didn't know where he was coming from.
Yeah. Maybe he sneaked in the family entrance.
All as I want is a return match with that guy, and I'll knock him out and win that championship.
Yeah, well, how about me for your trainer? You know, I go to Boy Scout camp every summer, Tony, and I tell you, honest, Tony, I'll build you up like a mess of muscle, honest to God.
Okay, Charlie, I know I can't lose with you in my corner.
That's right. Now about getting something in your eye. I tell you what you do. See, all you have to do is keep one glove in front of each eye, see?
How am I going to see then?
Oh, well, you can see a lot better that way than if his gloves were there, don't you see? Now, what are you going to do when you get in the ring?
I'll clip him, so help me. I'll mow him down.
Yeah. We'll murder the bum. And just to show you what I think of you, Tony, I'm going to ask Mr. Armbruster in Hollywood to dedicate a song to you. A little swing number. Sort of a harvest song, a haymaker, see? Entitled Deep Purple.
Oh, boy.
Adapted from Black Eyes, Why Are You Blue? Swing it, Armbruster.
The main thing about Chasin' Sanborn coffee is that it's just about the finest coffee in the whole world. But there are other features about Chasin' Sanborn. You see, when you take all the United States and Canada, they're so big that in different sections there are different problems. So in various parts of the country, we have special ways of handling Chasin' Sanborn coffee.
Such as what, Don?
Well, such as the special roasting plants we built in different parts of the country.
Well, that sounds hard. Why do they do it?
Just to get the roaster near the cup.
Well, why don't they move the cup?
Well, because there are too many cups. The whole point, Dorothy, is to be sure that the coffee is fresh.
And that's why there is special news for different parts of the country?
That's exactly right, Dorothy. For the next few seconds, each listener in the United States and Canada is going to hear what's going on in his own part of the country. So here we go, starting now.
Thanks, Don. And Don is right. We do have something special here in the East. We're the first to get the Chasin' Sanborn dated coffee in the new silver package, and it's going over big. People like good coffee that they know is fresh. Fresh coffee is important, just like fresh milk or eggs. If you let coffee get stale, it's apt to taste rancid and bitter. But you never get stale coffee when you buy Chasin' Sanborn dated coffee. We don't let your grocer sell it stale. Our delivery men stop at his store every few days with fresh coffee they've brought from the roasting ovens. They leave just a limited amount, about enough to last until the next delivery. And the date your grocer gets it is marked right on the silver package, so you can tell you're getting it freshly roasted. It's always rich and fragrant, the way you want it to be. You don't pay anything extra for Chasin' Sanborn dated coffee in the new silver package. Everyone can afford it. It's well worth trying. Have it hot or iced. Either way, you'll see how much better coffee tastes when it's fresh. Why don't you try it tomorrow and get your family's opinion on it?
Expressive in its utter simplicity is Ethelbert Nevin's The Rosary. Donald Dixon sings it.
The hours I spent with thee, dear heart, are as a string of pearls to me. pearl, each pearl a prayer. To still a heart in absence wrong, I tell each bead on holy earth, and there across bitter loss, I kiss each bead and strive at last to learn to kiss the cross with heart.
We come to the end of another Chase and Sanborn hour, an hour that is made possible by your purchases of Chase and Sanborn coffee. That's the best way of telling us you enjoy our show. Tomorrow, July 10th, is a red letter day in the life of our boyfriend, Charlie McCarthy. As goodwill ambassador of Chase and Sanborn, he's all set to lead a stupendous and colossal parade at the New York World's Fair. Edgar will be there with him to make sure that Charlie doesn't fall off the elephant. And I know that all of you who can will want to pay your respects to Charlie. And while you're at it, pay ours too, will you? Next Sunday, Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy will be back in Hollywood again with all of us. Dorothy L'Amour, Donald Dixon, and Robert Armbruster in the Chase and Sanborn Orchestra. Our special guests will be Andrea Leeds and Charlie Irwin. Until then, this is yours sincerely, Don Amici, saying au revoir. Seeing the New York World's Fair or the San Francisco Golden Gate International Exposition. Join them, and while you're there, enjoy the special attractions provided by Chase and Sanborn. In San Francisco, the colorful House of Hospitality. In New York, the magnificent Standard Brands Building, featuring our great free outdoor marionette show with puppets of Edgar Bergen, Charlie McCarthy, Don Amici, and Dorothy L'Amour. And as a very special attraction, tomorrow, July the 10th, is Charlie McCarthy Day at the New York World's Fair. Edgar Bergen and Charlie will be there personally to greet all their friends. Next week, another big Chase and Sanborn Hour.
Andrea Leeds, Don Amici, Edgar Bergen, Charlie McCarthy, Dorothy L'Amour, Donald Dixon, Charlie Irwin, and Robert Armbruster and the Jason Sanborn Orchestra. Heard on this program, The Big Show by Jerome Kern. This is Jim Bannon speaking for the makers of Jason Sanborn Coffee.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.